Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. This is not the This is Recalibration Matrix.
Are you sure?
I don't like. Listen, time is a flat disk, or I don't know what time is actually at this point. Interminable. But this is Recalibration Matrix, which is a podcast about Marvel Crisis Protocol. And I'm your host, Jay Larson. And joining me this week is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm doing better than some.
That's true. Our good friend Michael Chili Winters volunteered as a poll worker and is the poll worker part. I don't think like that's I admire that very much. But he's definitely someone who's having some struggles more so than even us, I think so.
Yeah, but to be honest, Chili is rarely happy. So I used to work out with Chili and I loved it because it was a great workout. But my way of like motivating myself is like, I'm going to be fucking hot. And Chili's like, I'm going to work out because I hate my body and I want it to die. And that's just one of the many differences between me and my good friend Michael Chili Winters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, time advances on.
Yes. Every day we get closer to death.
That's true too.
But you know what, Jay? I have been trying my best to like give myself reasons to joy. So I took my daughter and my son to the zoo and. That was really enjoyable, and I sent you the video of my daughter, like, she can ride on her balance bike now, and it's amazing. So, there's moments of joy in this wonderful year. And getting back, I'm sorry, Jay, how are you, Jay?
time marches on.
Yeah, okay.
In all seriousness, like, I guess at this point I'm somewhat relieved because, like, there's a lot of people I love in my life who could be doing a lot worse right now, and so that's good.
Yeah, that is good.
You said that you've been, to try to cope with the stress, you've been consuming media, and so what's been some of your favorite things that you've been consuming?
I have been reading, because I have a backlog of books. I actually went to Half Price Books and I found a copy of Goblin Emperor, which
yes.
you recommended to me, I think, over a year ago. And every time I go to Half Price, I look and my library does not have a copy and I've been requesting it. And so I finally found a copy at Half Price and I am almost three quarters of the way through and I love it. It's exactly the kind of, you know, like, epic political fantasy I want, and thank you. I've got the next, I guess after this I'm going to finish the newest Dresden Files book. Have you read that one yet?
No, I'm still in the process of telling myself I'm going to reread the entire series before.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah, I meant like, I finished book 9, I'm like, okay, I'm going to, I was actually like, I had a lot of friends recommend to me the book Lord of Light.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that?
No.
So it's a classic sci-fi novel. It is considered one of the classic greats.
Okay.
And I bounced off it really hard. And then you were saying like, oh, I've been really loving Goblin Emperor. And I really didn't remember much about it. mm-hmm. other than like some of the bare bones. Like you said some stuff in text today about something that happened was really cool. It's like, oh, I didn't remember that happening. And so I'm rereading it now, and that's nice. So
yeah, I do want to point out, I really think it's funny, the Goblin Emperor thing, where I texted Jay and I was like, why do all these characters have the same first name? And it's like made up names. And I was like, this is really confusing. I can't keep these characters apart. And I was more than halfway through the book when I realized it's like a made up title that determines if you're a single marriage age woman or a married woman or a widowed woman. And like, so they keep what I thought was a first name is actually like a social status symbol to like help the society. And I was too dumb or thick or whatever to realize. And I was like, shit, I'm going to have to reread this entire book now that I realize you shouldn't pay attention to just the first names. It was really funny though.
So one thing that's fun, interesting, I guess, not funny. So it got second place in the Hugo Awards, the Goblin Emperor, in the year that it got it. And have you read The Three Body Problem?
I haven't. I have
it seems
seen...
like it is very much right up your alley.
Yeah, I it definitely is. I just have not gotten around to it.
Yeah, so Three Body Problem is what won the Hugo Award. And I read The Three Body Problem, and the second and third books in the trilogy were released, and I was like, I think I'm just going to stop at book one. And I ended up enjoying The Goblin Emperor a lot more. But I think that, like, The Three Body Problem is I think, at this point, considered a modern classic. So, and it is, it's being made by Netflix.
Yeah, I did want to read it before the series came out, because I'm that kind of nerd.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'll have to get on that.
Add to your backlog.
Oh, it's, yeah. Yeah, I also found a bunch of, like, sci-fi fantasy classics for $1 or $2 at half price, so I picked those up.
Oh, nice.
Is Half Price Books a national chain? Do you have those anywhere near you?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I don't know.
I know it's a Texas chain. I just didn't know if it was outside of Texas. It's literally they buy and sell used books and they sell at half price. That's
right.
Their
right,
deal.
Right. Yeah. I don't read physical books, Greg.
Oh, that's fair. And normally I've mostly switched to library books, but
years ago Brian made an edict that we were not going to have physical books, physical movies, or physical music, and which was ahead of his time at the time, but
yeah
now I'm just, that's what I'm used to, is we have enough crap in our house without physical media.
That's totally fair, right? Like I honestly get it, because I mean when I moved into this apartment, I promptly put all my DVDs and shit like in a closet, and I was like, I don't need these anymore. Even my Disney DVDs, I'm like, I have Disney Plus now. What am I keeping these for?
Yeah.
Because previously, right, I was all about the Disney Movie Club. I loved it. Okay.
All right.
So on to Marvel Crisis Protocol news. They have teased, in the last 2 days, they've teased the Inhuman Royal Family coming to the game. I believe they did say it's like further down the line, so we shouldn't expect it right away in 2021. But I did want to ask you, Jay, do you know anything about the Inhumans?
No, not really, huh?
Okay. Like, not even that TV show that came out?
No, huh?
Okay. First of all, don't watch the TV show. All of our listeners, don't watch the Inhuman TV show. It is so bad. To give you my biggest just like sign that the show is bad, one of the Inhumans' name is Medusa, and she's coming to the game. She's Black Bolt's wife, so she's the queen of the Inhumans, and her power is that she has extremely strong and like prehensile hair. So she's got this like, just, you know, imagine a woman who, like, her hair is giant and it goes all the way to the floor, and she can control it like a weapon. In episode 1 or 2, the bad guy shaves her head in this show because, and the rumor is they did it because they didn't want a computer generate, like, her magic red hair all the time. So she is bald for the rest of the show. And that is just one of the many problems with this show.
Okay.
It's so bad.
Okay.
But I'm really excited. The Inhumans are a like old school, goofy, amazing Marvel team. If you haven't seen it yet, I did post on our Facebook profile the teasers, and I've been going through in our Discord and chatting about this one Marvel comic that I picked, just so that like if anybody's like, who the hell are the Inhumans, you can jump with me and read this comic because it's so much fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. I guess a few other quick things. I had suspected that this was going to be the case, given like the lack of previews that we've kind of had, I had a conversation about this as well in Discord, and so I think there are some people who will be interested in how it all works, but the general process that Asmodee normally does with a new release is that they'll have some teaser stuff. As an example, you know, we've seen She-Hulk, her sculpt, right? And then after that, a few months, they will show like her, what the box art is going to look like. They'll say what her item number is going to be, and they'll say, what her retail price is going to be. And then a few months after that, they will announce what the release date is for it. And it's usually, so for example, we're in the start of, November right now. They should in like around the next week or so, we should get the release dates for December, for Asmodee, for all of Asmodee, right? So the reason why I suspected that we weren't going to have, any new releases in December is because currently we don't have any models that don't already have release dates. We have the X-Men. Actually, I ordered the X-Men today, and they're shipping to me now, which is exciting. Get your X-Men pre-orders in. But we don't. After the X-Men release, like we don't have any items right now where they've previewed like the box art or the suggested retailer, the item numbers of on any of those items, which indicates that we didn't have any releases that we're likely going to be releasing within the next little near future or whatever, right? If for example She-Hulk, if we had had her suggested retail price, item number, etc., already, then it could have been a lot more feasible for her to have been a December release, but we're not that far along in the process. So it'll be interesting to see when in January what we're likely to see. I'm assuming or guessing that we'll see Angela and Enchantress in January, although they still haven't been previewed with like their item number and suggested retail either. So that's information, I guess, on how Asmodee and Atomic Mass works for those who are interested.
And that's a little bit like, that's a little bit less turnaround time than most game solicitations, right?
It varies a fair bit by company. There's some that you get like months of notice, or they solicit it months in advance, and most of the retailers ignore it, until right at the last minute, I guess. Or at the other extreme, you have Games Workshop that will generally, you'll get the product info. Like last Monday, I got product info on, some items. I can start pre-selling them on Friday. I'll order them on Monday, and they'll be in stock for sell the following weekend. And so it's basically from preview to pre-sell to sell is a 2-week window in Games Workshop, which is really tight in comparison to a lot of other places.
Yeah, it's... I just remember, like, 3 months seemed to be about average for when, like, order information went out to, like, when stuff was shipping.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of times there will be 2 or 3 months when of you having, like, the item number and the suggested retail on items from Asmodee, including Atomic Mass, before the actual release date. So,
gotcha.
So okay. I wouldn't be unless they start doing some, you know, releasing some item numbers, prices, box arts, etc. here soonish.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be super shocked either if there aren't any new releases in January.
Yeah, it might be a break. I know they specifically posted on social media that nothing in December, but
yes,
so correct. Maybe something in January. I don't know.
Correct. But, yeah.
Okay. Well. I'm okay with a break. I hope you guys are. Jay, did you see that we got an affiliation card with more of Magneto's friends?
I did, actually.
Yeah. Because the card, so the Brotherhood of Mutants card and the Uncanny X-Men card was shown as well. Couple surprises. Brotherhood of Mutant is going to be Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver and Juggernaut as well, which is really exciting. Because I was worried we wouldn't get Juggernaut, and he's the one I was like, yeah. I'm excited about that. And then Uncanny X-Men are going to get Cable, Domino, and Jean Grey, which is surprising that we're getting Domino so soon.
I didn't recognize Domino.
Yeah. Well, she's in Deadpool 2, and she's generally an X-Force-like mutant. She's got luck-based powers, so... she's a pretty interesting character, and I've enjoyed her. I made a list that was like my first 50 predicted mutants I tried to do, and they were like in order.
Mm-hmm.
And Cable was definitely on it, and there were a bunch of X-Force characters, and Domino, I forgot her on my X-Force list. Like, I was just like, oh, okay. So it was kind of funny to see her pop up, but, It's a weird list, right? It doesn't include a lot of the popular 90s shows. It doesn't include Iceman or Archangel or Angel or whatever. So it omits some of the original X-Men and some of the big popular ones. But of course, it's going to be updated as soon as, you know, new characters come out.
Yeah, yeah. And wasn't Iceman, what was he in?
Iceman has not been teased at all. We don't have an Iceman.
I thought for sure I saw that on...
No, I'm looking at it right now. It's Cyclops, Storms, Wolverine, Beast, Cable, Domino, Jean Grey. But Iceman is like such a good character. We need him. I was chatting about how I wanted Iceman to be packaged with Pyro. I think it'd be fun. And then I think Omnis wanted me to write a rat battle between the two of them, which would also be fun. Anyways, we should talk about the character we're actually gathered here today to talk about.
Well, let's do it.
All right. Hi, everybody. We're here to talk about the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne. She is a Transformer, just like Ant-Man. And so I'm going to do her normal side first and then her tiny side. So they both sides have the same defensive stats. 5 stamina, a 3 physical, 2 energy, 3 mystic. When she's normal, she's got a medium move and she's size 2. She has size changing smackdown, which is range 3, 5 dice, 0, and it's her strike. It generates power equal to the damage dealt. And then after the attack is resolved, she transforms into Tiny Wasp, and she drops all objective tokens. So remember, when you transform, you place yourself within range 1 of the other model. She can change size for 1. And that's drops all the objectives as well. She can use a superpower called Pym Discs, which it costs 3, and it's a throw. She can throw a size 3 terrain medium. So that's a pretty good throw, but it costs 3. So that's a little bit unfortunate. She's got a reactive superpower called Pym Particle Control that... if she's targeted by an attack or would suffer collision, you can use it. She drops all objectives and transforms before the attacker collision continues. And just like Ant-Man, this does not let you avoid attacks or collision. You've already been targeted, and it doesn't recheck range or anything, so you are still getting attacked. It just really, the bonus is it lets you move, and it lets you get the tiny superhero power to get defensive. She also has flight. So when she's in tiny size, she goes from medium to long move. So that's really nice. She becomes size one. So that's cool. It lets her hide behind size twos. She has two energy attacks when she's in this size. The first one is called Stinger Blast. It's range 2, 5 power, 0. And it has the normal strike ability where you gain power equal to damage. But the really cool special thing is your opponent does not gain power for the damage dealt. I really like Stinger Blast for dealing with Venom, because often you can Stinger Blast him and not worry about him being able to counterattack. And then she has Wasp's Fury, so it's range 3, power 6, and then 2 power. I'm sorry, strength 6 and 2 power. And after she does it, she can make a medium advance and then transform. So tons of movement there. She can change size for 1, just like on her normal size. She has tiny superhero, just like Ant-Man, which says you can reroll any number of defense or dodge dice, but she cannot hold objective tokens. So that's why transforming to tiny forces you to drop tokens, and you cannot hold them when you're tiny. She has stealth, and then she still has flight. When she's on her injured side, she's exactly the same. There's no big changes. So when I first looked at Wasp, I compared her to Ant-Man, and I found her to not be very impressive. I was a little bit disappointed. Ant-Man had that really amazing bullet ant barrage. Ant-Man seems pretty much just as mobile as her, because he has that free range three move. They're the same cost. But there's a couple things that I think make Wasp like very, very competitive versus him. And I think where people are going to end up, people are going to kind of pick one or the other of them. I don't think we're going to see them together, because they do similar jobs, but they do them differently. They're both extremely mobile. They both have the cool transform ability to let them reroll defense dice, basically. I think the main difference is going to be in this. Wasp has that long move when she's tiny. And then Wasp's Fury means that if you're playing a scenario where you'll have lots of targets to attack, Wasp is going to be moving much further than Ant-Man. She's going to be able to make a long move, Wasp's Fury, and then move a medium plus a 1-inch place. That's insane. I think it's really good. And I think I really like how she'll be able to move, attack someone from range 3, and then move even further away to avoid retaliation. And I really am. I mentioned Venom earlier because I've really enjoyed playing Wasp. Both games I played with her this week, or last week, my opponent had Venom, and I would use Stinger Blast, and then I would Wasp's Fury and like run away. And it was really cool. So in the scenario of like going up against Venom, she was a better choice than Ant-Man because she has the energy attacks. I think they're very comparable, and I think people who are like absolutely in love with Ant-Man won't take her. And that's fine. But it's really cool how similar they are. But I think the energy attacks, I think the long move, and I think the Wasp's Fury like really give her something cool. And I don't know. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on Wasp?
I think she's really interesting. I guess there's, I do have a question for you. So one of the things that, and I guess maybe this is a dumb question, but one of the things that I've frequently seen people say is that they don't think that you're going to see many lists where you have both Ant-Man and Wasp together. And I guess I don't fully understand why.
Okay. Well,
another way of saying that is like, I kind of wonder if the community has made a assumption about these two characters and said, you know, this is the best way to play them, or maybe had some groupthink on the topic. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And maybe everyone's right and you shouldn't play them together. But I guess that's kind of my question for you. Why do you think that may be the case?
So I think you're not going to take two just because I don't see the point of having two like really fast mobile characters that are out of affiliation. So I've been playing them both mostly in Web Warriors, and I just can't afford to take both of them most of the time because I need to take Web Warriors. And they do, in Web Warriors, they do kind of fill the same slots as, you know, they're a fast, nimble character for grabbing scenarios. I just don't think...
It is kind of
unfortunate. I guess part of it is I think both of them are silly in Avengers. I don't think they make use of the leadership ability at all, which is some scornergy right there.
Sure, yeah. And it also kind of feels like it's a little bit unfortunate that both of them currently are only affiliated in Avengers. And so, if you're looking at, like, unaffiliated three-point options, then you might be right on that. I do think it would be... I guess that's not... So, this is a dumb list, but stick with me on this. Let's say that you're doing a three-point extravaganza list. And so, you've got, like... I suppose you could do it in either Guardians or in Web Warriors. But let's say that you do Web Warriors with Miles and Gwen, Taskmaster, and Ant-Man and Wasp.
Mm-hmm.
That gets you to 15. 18 might be like Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
to keep you affiliated. But yeah, I don't know that that's actually good. But I do think it's interesting. Let's say you're doing a 15 point battle. I do think that 5 3-point characters is kind of interesting.
I think so too. I think it opens up some problems with like matchups, just partly because you usually don't have somebody who can
as much hitting power.
It'll be harder to stun and daze someone if you need to.
Right. Yeah.
But I do think we're getting to the point where we can make some really cool ones. Like, my Web Warrior lists have often, like, I've been playing around with Taskmaster, Miles, Gwen as the beginning. And something I'm finding is that with Ghost Rider, like, Ghost Rider wants a ton of other allied characters around him. So if you can have, you know, Wasp with an objective and Ghost Rider within 3 of the enemy, that's putting you in a pretty good situation to just Ghost Rider them to death if they attack Wasp. I think it'll be really cool if we can build... I guess I'm just saying that I think when most people are building their rosters of 10, they'll pick one or the other to fill like a Web Warrior style character in a list that has transformed.
And it is a little bit unfortunate that they are only in the Avengers affiliation, and that, you know, there have been some people in discussions in the Discord channels who have had pretty strong opinions that they think that that the Avengers are the weakest affiliation right now. And I don't necessarily have too strong of an opinion on that, just because I think that like the delta between like the weakest and the strongest affiliations is pretty small. And so it's kind of a play whatever you want to, but kind of in that vein, I've personally, as I'm assuming a lot of people have, are I'm somewhat victim to, you know, the shiny new, and like I'm just not as excited to play Avengers as, you know, to get to play Defenders or Criminal Syndicate or Web Warriors or et cetera, right? And so, or in a few days, X-Men.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also hard. So I think it's hard when a character doesn't really like obviously benefit from your leadership ability.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
the situation where both of they are they're in. There's no like Captain America is not really the right leader for them.
Especially when there's like so many characters that just love Captain America's leadership, right?
Yeah, like even then, right? There's so many three cost characters that love
right.
it, like Hawkeye, or I mean even Black Widow, and yeah, heck, even Taskmaster, right? Like I think there's so many good three pointers that have like great reactive abilities. Mm-hmm. That or they have like good superpowers that they're going to use almost every single turn. Like, why would you take one of these characters over Gwen, who can now use her pull to safety, her what is it called, lifesaver, every single turn? You know, for one, I don't mean to dump on Ant-Man and the Wasp. This is more of a Captain America has a very situational superpower that is not good with them. This conversation, like, we might want to revisit them if there's ever a new Avenger leader, which, since Brotherhood and X-Men have two leaders, I am sure we can say that the other affiliations will be getting a second leader eventually.
Mm.
So maybe we can reevaluate them as Avengers later.
Yeah.
But I guess this is I like them in Web Warriors. Do you have any affiliations you think like Wasp fits well in?
I do think that she kind of fits into the thing that you're usually doing with Guardians, where you're taking kind of cheaper characters that having more attacks, looking for those. You know, one of the things that's because this game has more dice swings with it. If you can put out more dice rolls, then that gives you more chances to have those big spikes where, you know, a lot of times you may think like, oh, Stinger Blast is not going to do very much. And then all of a sudden, you know, it just goes crazy. And, mm-hmm. you know, those things happen. So. Yeah.
And I really like that the dice swing with her just are even better because Stinger Blast, oh, I did 4 damage that you don't get power for. It's pretty sweet. I don't know. I don't know. So something I do want to talk about now is that Pym Particles is becoming one of my favorite like specific team tactic cards.
Mm-hmm.
That like so to remind you, it's you pay 3 and then a character. I think it's a. So I lost my Pym Particle card after playing with it, but off the top of my head, it's Ant-Man or the Wasp, pay 3, and then a character within 3 of them can throw a size 3 or smaller terrain within medium, or something like that. Or maybe it's range 2.
I've got good news to you.
What?
For you, Greg.
What?
It is Ant-Man or Wasp may spend 2 to play this card, not 3.
See? Even better.
And then it is choose another allied character within range 3 of this character, then choose an interactive terrain feature size 3 or less within range 3 of the chosen character. The chosen character throws it medium.
It's so good. It's a good throw that you don't want Ant-Man and the Wasp to like be close to enemies, but mm-hmm. like let's say you've got, you know, a character attacking MODOK. Ant-Man and the Wasp do not want to get near them, and they don't. Like, you can be 3 away from your friend and throw a size 3 at MODOK out of activation. It's incredible. It's a really good card.
The other thing that I like about it is that, and I guess this is more a follow-up of our conversations with Pagani and Schick about, like, the banned and restricted list. In a normal... Before the banned list, restricted list was implemented, I don't know that you would have put this in for having space with it, but also you would have had less incentive to because you were likely going to see more Brace for Impact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of people now who are having to make hard decisions, obviously, about what are the restricted cards I'm going to actually play with. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are going to make that decision of I'm not going to take Brace for Impact, which will make this card a lot more valuable.
Yes, exactly. The drop in people bringing, and I've noticed like right away, less people are bringing Brace for Impact, more people are bringing, I mean, I've seen a lot of Field Dressing and Med Pack mostly.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's what you like. That's what I predicted.
I think that
in my local community, that's what I'm noticing.
I would say that the most common card that people pick that I've seen has been Med Pack. And then there is kind of a variety after that, whether it's Field Dressing, I've seen some Brace, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the Brace for Impact being restricted has led to it being less used, and that is a bonus for this card.
Yeah.
And maybe yeah. Heave Ho? Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's pause our discussion about her in-game here, and let's dive into our comic book club.
Yeah. I'm really excited for this. So we read Uncanny Avengers issues 6 through 10 or 6 through 11?
10, I believe.
10? Okay. We probably should have read 11. I'm sorry. I read further on, and I think I realized that I had told everybody to read to 10. Well, I hope everybody enjoys it so much that they keep reading it, because I'm 20 issues in, and I was like, all right, this is pretty cool. So, the general plot summary is mutants are so rare and so persecuted that Captain America and the Avengers have created a Avengers Unity Squad. The whole point is to have a lot of mutants on the team and a lot of classic Avengers as a way of like having goodwill for mutants. That's the previous story. And then this comic is really cool because it starts off with a bit of like ancient history, and it shows that Thor was once attacked by Apocalypse, and in response, Thor tried to get Odin to help him, let's go beat up Apocalypse. And Odin had been like, no, Apocalypse is an agent of the Celestials, we don't get involved with them. And Thor was basically tricked into enchanting his axe, Yarnborn, and it is now enchanted to be able to cut through celestial armor. Celestials are, you know, the giant godlike creatures that nobody should be fucking with because they're way too powerful. And Apocalypse is an agent of the Celestials to make sure that mutants and like Apocalypse wears celestial armor because Apocalypse is supposed to make sure that mutants like eventually rule the Earth, because that's the natural evolution of mankind, apparently. Regardless, it's a trick by a time traveler named Kang or Immortus or so. Okay, real quick, Jay.
Yes,
my problem with Kang the Conqueror is that there are multiple different versions of Kang the Conqueror.
Okay,
but they're all the same person. And sometimes in comics, it's a different point in his life, and then other times it's a split timeline difference. And so, like, Kang can fight other Kangs sometimes, and there's Immortus, who is also Kang, but, like, got a different thing. And then there's also, like, an Egyptian version of him. It's very confusing sometimes, and, like, even I am not 100% sure.
So,
and, like, sometimes Kang is Mr. Fantastic's dad, and sometimes he isn't. Like, I don't know. Because
so,
it's partly time travel, and it's partly Marvel not being super consistent.
So are you saying that sometimes time travel plots and characters can be a little bit incoherent?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Interesting.
And that's where we are with this. So Thor takes the magic axe, and he basically, like, almost kills Apocalypse, but he escapes. Odin finds out and is pissed, and basically says, "You are going to regret enchanting your stupid axe, you idiot." And then we, like, go immediately to Kang teleporting in and taking the axe out of, like, a corpse, and being like, "Aha, I got the magic axe now." Which is funny. So, The big thing is that Kang is a time traveler conqueror, and what he's just done is getting the weapon that will allow him to do other things. So he basically had a plan to make sure mutants didn't ever mess with him. He stole the two children of Archangel, and this is from another comic, and those two children are called the Apocalypse Twins. Are you with me?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
They would eventually become the new Apocalypses and, you know, fight the X-Men and blah, 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 and try to make mutants supreme. But Kang stole them out of as babies, and he raised them to try to come back, and basically, like, that's the current fight we're seeing in this storyline. So, did we see Rogue kill the Grim Reaper in this storyline?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So that was, so the Avenger Unity Squad is basically coming in, and they're trying to, like, be all, like, mutant, show off that mutants can be helpful and part of the Avengers. But in their first press release, they're attacked by the Grim Reaper, and Rogue kills him accidentally because she absorbed Wonder Man's powers and didn't realize how incredibly strong he is.
Mm-hmm.
This is now, by the way, Jay, the second time you and I have seen Wonder Man or the Grim Reaper die, because we saw him die in the Vision comic as well. So that's fun. But so, yeah, so the Havoc is trying to, you know, get Rogue cleared. And the team is kind of like falling apart over that, because like Havoc should be supporting Rogue, but instead he's like kind of capitulating that Rogue should be benched. So there's a part where like Wasp is showing Havoc her plan to get everybody on the mutant sides, and that's to turn mutants into like fashion icons, where her clothing line will be marketed to, like, and I really liked the art that they had for it, because it showed, you know, like, different outfits that represented different X-Men, and, like, I think there was, like, a Storm poncho, and I thought that was really cute and really cool. And then that's when the, like, you know, the shit hits the fan, because the Apocalypse Twins are attacking the sword. It's like a space station meant to protect Earth from aliens. And then they go and attack, and like Sunfire, Captain America, and Thor like get to the space station, and everything's a trap. So like Sunfire has to throw Captain America into an ejection bolt while he tries to stop it. And Thor has to break the falling wreckage to save people, and then Thor and Sunfire eventually end up like teleported to the ship, but they're teleported away. While the rest of the twins are like, while the rest of the team is like flying around. And then Captain America, it's like a trap. The whole setup was to get Captain America to Sudan, where he could get a message from Immortus from the future, because the twins have set up like a dam that stops time travelers. And so Captain America gets this secret message from Immortus that about how he needs to beat the twins, and how they have like a micro universe. He gives Captain America like a clue that there's how to find them. The Apocalypse Twins go to the city of Akaba, which is Apocalypse's city, where it used to be full of mutants who worshipped Apocalypse. They're all depowered because of the Scarlet Witch. And so the twins just kill all of them because they're not useful and they're not mutants anymore. And then how did they do it? So the twins told the team about how Logan had murdered the young Apocalypse child that would have been the next Apocalypse. And the team like starts fighting over it, and Captain America confronts Wolverine, and he's like, yeah, I killed the young Apocalypse. And I don't remember if he says this, but he also killed Archangel, because Archangel was basically, this was in X-Force, and this is a really good comic, but in X-Force, they hunted down Apocalypse, found out it was a kid, And then they faked his death but they were gonna kill him. And then they found out by doing that, well, they killed him, but they didn't kill him. They like fixed him and made him a normal kid. But by doing that, they triggered the next apocalypse would be created, and that was Angel. So Archangel like took over and became evil, and Wolverine killed Archangel, which was sad. And we do see a lot of Logan like kind of being haunted by the fact that he's like killed so many people. And one like there's a lot of scenes he like his son had a lot of his powers, and his son was really evil but wanted his dad's love and attention, and Logan drowned him in a puddle. It was really fucked up. And so the Avengers team splits up basically on people who are okay with murdering people with Wolverine, and people who are not okay with murdering going with Havoc and Captain America and the Wasp and them. And meanwhile, like, the twins have... It shows that the twins have, like, convinced Scarlet Witch to work with them. And so that's the, like, the big, oh my god, what the fuck cliffhanger. Jay.
Yes.
What did you think of Uncanny Avengers? The Apocalypse Twins Rising.
Well, I think that we can pause there, and I will give you my hot takes in the bonus episode.
Oh, what a cliffhanger. Dun, oh dun, my god. Dun. Everybody, I am so excited to hear what Jay thinks. And if you want to hear what Jay thinks, you need to be a Patreon backer. And by becoming a Patreon backer, you get access to our bonus episodes and next week's episodes and access to our really cool Discord channel where you can get the inside scoop about, I think today everybody was blaming me for a certain crisis card and making fun of me. Mm. And that's fine, and it's hilarious. I'm just pointing out that we have shenanigans, and it's fun. But it's also the really good place to ask me about the Inhumans and the comic that I'm reading with the Discord group. Or it's the place to ask Jay about when are things coming out next month. And Jay can tell you, I don't know, but I'll tell you when I do know. And it's a really fun little Discord, and we would really like to have you.
We would. And thank you to everyone who is supporting the podcast. We appreciate it. And check out discountgamesinc.com and Muse on Minis, and make a purchase to try to fill the emptiness in your soul right now.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that ship game that I ordered from you. What is it called again?
Kings of War Armada.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
That's a terrible name. It should be called Kings of Manowar.
Okay, well, there you have it. So, Greg, tell everyone about the arc that we're reading next.
Oh, fuck. We are reading... Okay, so we're doing Doctor Strange. And so we are reading... It's called something. So it's really cool. The reason I'm going to talk a bit about why I picked it, because the reason I picked it is it's drawn by Mike Mignola, who is really famous for Hellboy. So it's a really cool arc. It is called Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom: Triumph and Torment from 1989, and it's just one really long issue. It's like 80 pages, but it's really fun. That's Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom: Triumph and Torment.
Awesome. I am excited. And how many arcs is it? Or issues
just,
is it begin?
It's one issue. When you go to Marvel Unlimited, it's one long issue.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I am excited to talk about Doctor Strange next episode.
And Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
Triumph and Torment.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Jay.